Chapter 18, Order of the Presidium Meeting. Number 1. The setting of every meeting shall be uniform. The members should sit around a table at one end of which, for the purpose of the meeting, a small temporary altar is erected. On a white cloth of sufficient size is placed a statue of the Immaculate Conception in the attitude of the distribution of graces, preferably about 2 feet, 60 centimeters high, flanked by 2 vases of flowers and 2 candlesticks with lighted candles. A little to the right of the statue and a little in advance of it should be set the vexillum, which is described in chapter 27. Photographs of the setting of the altar and of the vexillum will be found facing page 106. As the idea is that the statue represents the queen present among her soldiers, the altar must not be separated from the meeting table or so placed as to remove the statue outside the circle of the members. Filial love towards our Heavenly Mother dictates that the equipment and the flowers should be as good as possible. The equipment is not a recurring item of expense. Possibly a benefactor or some other good fortune might put the presidium in possession of silver vases and candlesticks. It should be regarded as an honorable duty on the part of some legionary to keep the vexillum and the vases and candlesticks clean and bright, and duly provided with flowers and candles at the expense of the presidium. If natural flowers are absolutely unobtainable, it would be allowable to use artificial ones with some greenery added to provide the element of living nature. In climates where it is necessary to shield the flame of the candles, plain glass cups or globes, which will not conceal the candle itself, may be fitted on to the top of the candle. The words Legio Mariae may be worked upon the cloth, but not the name of the presidium. Points of unity, not of distinction, should be stressed. And the following is a quote from Redemptoris Mater, Mary Mother of the Redeemer, Pope John Paul II, 1987. Number 38. Quote, in effect, Mary's mediation is intimately linked with her motherhood. It possesses a specifically maternal character, which distinguishes it from the mediation of the other creatures who in various and always subordinate ways share in the one mediation of Christ, although her own mediation is also a shared mediation. In fact, while it is true that no creature could ever be classed with the incarnate Word and Redeemer, at the same time, the unique mediation of the Redeemer does not exclude but rather gives rise among creatures to a manifold cooperation, which is but a sharing in this unique source. And thus, the one goodness of God is in reality communicated diversely to his creatures. Number 2. Punctually, at the appointed time, the members shall be in their places, and the meeting shall begin. But a punctual start, so necessary for the efficiency of the presidium, will not be possible unless the officers are in attendance sometime in advance in order to make the requisite preparations. No presidium meeting is ever to begin without its written program termed the worksheet. This should be drawn up in advance of each meeting, and from it the president will call the business. In the worksheet should be set down in detail all the work being done by the presidium, and opposite to each item, the names of the members assigned to it. The various items need not necessarily be taken in the same order at succeeding meetings, but every member's name should be called and a report taken from each one, even though they may be working in parties of two or more. Before the end of the meeting, it is to be ensured that each member has been provided with his work for the coming week. The president should have a bound book in which the worksheet can be compiled each week. And the following is a quote from Monsignor Alfred O'Rahilly, Life of Father William Doyle. Quote, "Idealism, however fervent and absorbing, must never be an excuse for vague and unpractical emotion. As already pointed out, the genius of St. Ignatius consisted in his careful and methodical exploitation of religious energy. Steam is of no use, rather a nuisance, until we have a cylinder and piston for it. How much spiritual fervor goes to waste without a particular examine and definite application? A gallon of petrol might be misused to blow a car sky high. With care and inventiveness, it can be employed to propel it to the top of the hill." End of quote. Number 3. The meeting opens with the invocation and prayer to the Holy Spirit, who is the source of that grace, that life, that love, of which we rejoice to regard Mary as the channel. And the following is a quote from St. Bernardine's Sermon on the Nativity. Quote, "From the moment when she conceived the Son of God in her womb, Mary possessed, so to speak, a certain authority or jurisdiction over every temporal procession of the Holy Spirit, in such sort that no creature receives any grace from God except through her mediation. All the gifts and virtues and graces of the same Holy Spirit are administered by her to whom she pleases, when she pleases, and in the quantity and manner she pleases." And there is a note. The latter part of the above declaration, in almost identical words, is also found in the writings of St. Albert the Great, Biblia Mariana Liber Esther 1, who lived 200 years before St. Bernardine. End of quote. Number 4. There follow 5 decades of the Rosary, of which the spiritual director shall initiate the 1st, 3rd, and 5th, and the members the 2nd and 4th. No member is to act as if the rosary were a silent prayer. The same measure of dignity and respect should be imparted to its recitation, as if the gracious personage to whom it is addressed were visibly present in the place of the statue representing her. The proper recitation of the Ave requires that the second part should not begin until the first has been finished and the holy name of Jesus reverently pronounced. The rosary playing, both by rule and by recommendation, such an important part in the life of the legionary, each one is urged to register in the rosary confraternity. See Appendix 7. Pope Paul VI insists that the rosary must be preserved. It is pure prayer. Its contents are eminently biblical. It effectively summarizes the whole history of salvation, and it fulfills the essential purpose of exhibiting Mary in all her various roles in that history. And the following is a quote taken from Pope Leo XIII. Quote, "Among the different ways of praying, there is none more excellent than the rosary. It condenses into itself all the worship that is due to Mary. It is the remedy for all our evils, the root of all our blessings." End of quote. And there is another quote by St. Pius X. Quote, "Of all prayers, the rosary is the most beautiful and the richest in graces. Of all, it is the one which is most pleasing to Mary, the Virgin most holy. Therefore, love the rosary and recite it every day with devotion. This is the testament which I leave unto you, so that you may remember me by it. End of quote. And there is another quote by Le Corder. Quote, for Christians, the first of books is the Gospel, and the Rosary is actually the abridgment of the Gospel. End of quote. And there is another quote, St. Thomas Aquinas on Matt 18. Quote, it is impossible that the prayers of many should not be heard if those numerous prayers form but one single prayer. End of quote. Number five. The rosary is immediately followed by spiritual reading to be given by the spiritual director or in his absence by the president. Its duration should be limited to about 5 minutes. The choice of spiritual reading is free, but it is strongly recommended that at least during the early years of a presidium, the reading be taken from the handbook in order to familiarize the members with its contents and to stimulate them to study it seriously. On the conclusion of the reading, it is the custom for the members to make together the sign of the cross. And the following is a quote taken from Redemptoris Mater, Mary, Mother of the Redeemer, Pope John Paul II, 1987, number 20. Quote, without any doubt, Mary is worthy of blessing by the very fact that she became the mother of Jesus according to the flesh. Blessed is the womb that bore you and the breast that you sucked. But also and especially because already at the Annunciation, she accepted the word of God because she believed it, because she was obedient to God, and because she kept the word and pondered it in her heart. Luke chapter 1 verse 38, 45, chapter 2 verse 19, 51. And by means of her whole life accomplished it. Thus we can say that the blessing proclaimed by Jesus is not in opposition, despite appearances, to the blessing uttered by the unknown woman, but rather coincides with that blessing in the person of this Virgin Mother, who called herself only the handmaid of the Lord. End of quote. Number six. The minutes of the previous meeting are read and, if approved by the members present, are signed by the president. The minutes should strike a sensible mean between excessive and inadequate length and shall designate each meeting by its proper serial number. The importance of the minutes has already been stressed under the head of the secretary's duties. The minutes, being the first item of the ordinary business of the meeting, hold, as it were, a strategic position. By their quality and the manner of reading them, they may set the tone, for better or for worse, of all that follows. Good minutes are like good example. Poor minutes are like bad example. And it is necessary to insist that well-written minutes, badly read, rank as poor minutes. That example has compelling force upon the members. Their alertness, their reports are affected, so that the meeting may be good or bad simply because the minutes were good or bad. And the quality of the work will follow the quality of the meeting. So let the secretary, when engaged on the hidden work of preparation of the minutes, reflect on these things, and let the presidium, in the interest of its own efficiency, oversee them. And the following is a quote taken from Pope St. Pius X. Quote, it would indeed be shameful if in this matter Christ's saying should be verified that the children of this world are wiser than the children of light. Luke chapter 16, verse 8. We can observe with what diligence they look after their affairs, how often they balance their credit and debit, how accurately they make up their accounts, how they deplore their losses, and so eagerly excite themselves to repair them. End of quote. Number 8, Treasurer's Statement. The treasurer shall submit a weekly statement showing the income and expenditure of the presidium and the resulting financial position. And the following is a quote taken from James Millett of the Congregation of the Most Holy Spirit. Quote, souls are sometimes lost for want of money, or in other words, for want of a more complete participation in the apostolate. End of quote. Number 9, reports of the members are received. Members should remain seated while delivering their reports, which should be verbal, though members may aid themselves by notes. The presidium should not take the non-performance of the legionary duty as a matter of course. When members have been validly prevented from performing their work, they should, if possible, furnish some explanation. The absence of a report, if unexplained, conveys the impression that neglect of duty is in question and constitutes a bad example for every member. If members are attaching a reasonable degree of seriousness to their work, the necessity for excuse will arise but seldom, and happily so, for in an atmosphere of excuses, zeal and discipline wither away. The report is not to be directed to the president alone, for a certain mental process must be taken count of. When one person speaks to another individually, the voice automatically tunes itself to the precise distance and no more. This could mean that words addressed to the president would with difficulty be heard by persons further away. The report and all discussion upon it must be delivered in a tone of voice which will reach every part of the room. A report, however full and faithful, which is inaudible to many of those present, is, having regard to its depressing effect on the meeting, worse than no report. Whispering is no sign of modesty or gentleness, as some apparently imagine. Who so modest, who so gentle as Mary? Yet could anyone imagine her mumbling her words, or talking in such a fashion that those close to her could not hear what she was saying? O legionaries, imitate your queen in this, as in all other ways. Presidents must refuse to accept reports which require an effort to hear. But first let them be above reproach themselves. The president sets the tone for all the members. Usually the members speak less loudly than the president. If the latter speaks only in a moderate or conversational tone, the members' reports will come back in whispers. For members speaking clearly when the president is speaking softly will imagine themselves to be shouting and will reduce their tones to inaudibility. The members must insist on all, including the president, speaking out. Like a doctor, let the spiritual director make his own demand for audibility as a vital element in the health of the presidium. In its own way, the report is as important to the meeting as the prayers. They supplement each other. Both elements are necessary to a presidium meeting. The report connects the work with the presidium, and therefore it must be a clear presentation of the doings of the member, in a sense as vivid as the picture on a cinema screen, such as will enable the other members mentally to engage in that work, to judge it,
to comment on it, to learn from it. Accordingly, the report must show what has been attempted and achieved, and in what spirit, the time spent, the methods used, what has not been gained, and the persons who have not been touched. The meeting should be bright and cheerful. Therefore, the reports should be used as will interest as well as inform the meeting. It is impossible to believe that the Presidium is healthy if the meeting is deadly dull, and undoubtedly it will repel young members. Some classes of work are so full of variety that it is easy to make a good report. Other works do not offer the same possibilities, so that each unusual feature, however small, should be remembered for mention in the report. The report must not be too long nor too brief. Above all, it must not be a routine phrase. Failure in these directions not only shows that the member is neglecting his duty, but also that the other members are assisting him in that neglect. This strikes at the whole legionary idea of the supervision of the work. The Presidium cannot supervise a work unless it is fully informed about it. Generally, the work of the Legion is so difficult that members, if not stimulated by the minute consideration of their efforts by the meeting, may be inclined to spare themselves. This must not be. They are in the Legion to do as much as possible, and probably it will be in those very cases where the natural repugnancies assert themselves most that the greatest need for their work exists. It is mainly through the meeting that the legionary discipline is exerted, which overcomes those weaknesses and drives the members on to accomplishment. But if the report gives little indication as to what the legionary is really doing, then the Presidium can exert only a vague control over the member's actions. It will not stimulate him. It will not safeguard him. He will be deprived of the interest and guidance of the Presidium, and he cannot afford to be without those vital things. Legionary discipline loses its grip on that member, with unhappy results all around. Let it not be forgotten that bad reporting will draw the other members for the strong chains of imitation. Therefore, one who greatly desires to serve the Legion is found doing it tragic disservice. No legionary should be content to give a merely good report. Why not aim very high and deliberately set out to add to the perfect performance of the work a model report to the Presidium, and thus train the other members both in the doing of a work and in the way of reporting on it.
Example, says Edmund Burke, is the school of mankind, and they will learn at no other. Acting on this, one individual can raise an entire Presidium to the highest pitch of efficiency. For the report, though not the whole meeting, is so much its nerve center as to cause everything else in the Presidium to react in sympathy with it, either for better or worse. Above, Our Lady has been pointed to as inspiration for one aspect of the report. The thought of her can aid in every other aspect. A glance at her statue before beginning the report will ensure that thought. It is certain that anyone who tries to make his report as he imagines she would make it will not deliver a report which is inadequate from any point of view. And the following is a quote taken from Neubert, Marie Dans Le Dogme. Quote, "Some Christians see little more in Mary than a creature infinitely pure and exquisite, the tenderest and gentlest woman that ever existed. Therein they run the risk of having for her only a sentimental devotion are, if they are of a forceful character, of feeling but little attraction towards her. They have never realized that this virgin so tender, this mother so gentle, is as well the woman above all the most indomitable, and that never was there man so full of character as is this woman. End of quote. Number 10. The recitation of the Catena Legionis. At a fixed time, which experience has shown to be approximately midway between the signing of the minutes and the end of the meeting, that would be an hour after the opening of a meeting, which usually lasts an hour and a half. The Catena Legionis, see chapter 22, the prayers of the legion, is recited, all standing. The antiphon is recited by all present. The Magnificat in alternate verses by the spiritual director, are in his absence by the president and by the members. The prayer by the spiritual director, our president, alone. The sign of the cross is not made before the catena. It is made by all at the first verse of the Magnificat. It is not made after the prayer, because at once the Allocutio begins. There is nothing in the Legion more beautiful than this united recitation of the catena. Whether it finds the Presidium immersed in joy or disappointment, or treading wearily the way of routine, it comes like a breeze from heaven, all steeped in the fragrancy of her who is the lily and the rose, refreshing and gladdening most wonderfully. No mere picturesque description this, as every legionary knows full well. And the following is a quote from Bernard, Order of Preachers, The Mystery de Marie. Quote, I lay special stress on the Magnificat because it seems to me that it may be considered, in a way perhaps not commonly realized, a document of outstanding importance in its bearing on Mary's motherhood of grace. The Most Holy Virgin, identified with Christ as we know her to have been from the moment of the Annunciation, proclaims herself the representative of the entire human race, intimately associated with all generations, and bound up with the destinies of those who are truly her own. This canticle of hers is the song of her spiritual maternity. End of quote. And the following quote is from Marialis Cultus. The right ordering and development of devotion to the Blessed Virgin Mary, Pope Paul VI, 1974, number 18. Quote, the Magnificat is Mary's prayer par excellence, the song of the messianic times in which there mingles the joy of the ancient and new Israel. As Saint Irenaeus seems to suggest, it is in Mary's canticle that there was heard once more the rejoicing of Abraham, John chapter 8, verse 56, who foresaw the Messiah, and there rang out in prophetic anticipation the voice of the church. And in fact, Mary's hymn has spread far and wide, and has become the prayer of the whole church in all ages. End of quote. Number 11, the Allocutio, and there is a footnote. The Allocutio was the Roman general's address to his legionaries. End of footnote. When the members resume their seats, a short talk shall be given by the spiritual director. Except in special circumstances, this should take the shape of a commentary upon the handbook, with the object of eventually making the members completely familiar with every point contained therein. The Allocutio will be greatly appreciated, and it will play an all-important part in the development of the members. Responsibility for the latter exists, and it would be an injustice both to them and to the Legion not to draw out all their possibilities. To do this, it is essential that they be given a perfect knowledge of their organization. The study of the handbook will greatly help towards this end, but must not be considered to be a substitute for the Allocutio. Legionaries will believe that they have studied the handbook when they have read it attentively two or three times. But even 10 or 20 readings would not bring the degree of knowledge which the Legion desires. This will only be imparted by a systematic verbal explanation and expansion of the handbook week after week, year after year, until the members have become completely familiarized with every idea it contains. In the event of the absence of the spiritual director, the commentary should be made by the president or by any member designated by the president. It is stressed that a mere reading from the handbook or any other document does not suffice for the Allocutio. The Allocutio should not occupy more than 5 or 6 minutes. The difference between the Presidium, where the Allocutio has been thoroughly done, and the Presidium, where it has been badly done, will be precisely the difference between a trained and an untrained army. And the following is a quote from Monsignor Alfred O'Rahilly, Life of Father William Doyle. Quote, "I have long had the feeling that, since the world is growing so rapidly worse and worse, and God has lost his hold, as it were, upon the hearts of men, he is looking all the more earnestly and anxiously for big things from those who are faithful to him still. He cannot, perhaps, gather a large army round his standard, but he wants every man in it to be a hero, absolutely and lovingly devoted to him. If only we could get inside that magic circle of generous souls, I believe there is no grace he would not give us to help on the work he has so much at heart, our personal sanctification." End of quote. Number 12. On the completion of the Allocutio, the sign of the cross is made by all present. Then the taking of the reports and the other business of the meeting is continued. And the following is a quote taken from Lord, Our Lady in the Modern World. Quote, "The historic fact is that the speech of Our Lady was the speech of an extraordinarily refined woman. Her natural bent would easily have made her a poet. Each time she spoke, her words flowed in a rhythm that was actually poetry. Her phrasing was the picturesque language of the artist of words." End of quote. Number 13, Secret Bag Collection. Immediately after the Allocutio, a secret bag collection is made, to which every member shall contribute according to means. The purpose is the defraying of the various expenses of the Presidium and the contributing to the Curia and the higher consuls. It is repeated that these latter bodies have no means of support or of discharging their functions of government and extension other than what comes to them from the Presidia. See Chapter 35, Funds. The meeting is not to be interrupted for the making of this collection. The bag should be passed unostentatiously from member to member, and each one should place his hand in the bag, even though he may not be contributing anything to it. A proper bag should be provided for the purpose of receiving the members' offerings. A glove or a paper bag is not a proper receptacle. The collection is secret because it is necessary to place those who have resources and those who have not on precisely the same level before the Presidium. Therefore, the principle of secrecy should be respected, and no member should disclose to another what his contribution is. In the second place, all should appreciate that not alone the Presidium, but also the main running of the whole legion, depends on what is put into the secret bag by the individual legionary. Accordingly, the matter is not to be viewed as a mere formality. The obligation to subscribe is not complied with by the giving of a sum so inconsiderable as to mean nothing to him. The fact is that he is being afforded the privilege of sharing in the wider mission of the Legion. Therefore, the act of contributing to this fund should be one for the exercise of the sense of responsibility and generosity. It is only the individual gift which is secret. The total amount may be announced, and of course, it must be properly entered up and accounted for. And the following is a quote from Orsini's History of the Blessed Virgin. Quote, "When Jesus praises the offering of the widow, who gives not of her abundance, but of her indigence," Luke chapter 21, verses 3 to 4, "we suspect that his thought is of Mary, his mother." Number 14, termination of the meeting. When all the business has been transacted, including the assignment of work to each member and the marking of the attendance roll, the meeting ends with the concluding prayers of the Legion and the priest's blessing. The meeting shall not last longer than 1 hour and a half from the appointed time for starting. And the following is a quote from Matthew chapter 18, verses 19 to 20. "Again, truly I tell you, if two of you agree on earth about anything you ask, it will be done for you by my Father in heaven. For where two or three are gathered in my name, I am there among them." End of quote. Chapter 19. The meeting and the member. Number 1. Respect for the meeting. Everywhere in the natural order, the transmission of power depends on the making or the breaking of a connection. Similarly, in the Legion system, there can be a vital interruption at one point. A member may attend the meetings and yet receive little or no communication of that inspiration, devotedness, and strength which has been pictured above as the Legion life. There must be a union between meeting and member, and this union is not affected by a mere mechanical attendance on the part of the latter. An element must enter in to make that attendance an efficacious link between meeting and member, and this element is respect. On this respect, manifesting itself in obedience, loyalty, esteem, of member for meeting, everything in the Legion system depends. Number 2, the Presidium must be worthy of this respect. A body which does not, in its standards, rise above the average of its members, lacks the first essential of a guide, and will not long hold their respect. Number 3, the Presidium must respect the rules. Proportionately, as the legionary gives that respect to the Presidium, will a communication of legionary life be made to the legionary. And as the essence of the legionary spirit is the effort to achieve excellence, the Presidium must set itself to win, in the highest degree, the respect of its members, so that it may correspondingly influence them. A Presidium seeks to build upon sand, which claims from its members a respect which it does not itself give to the code under which it works, a fact which explains the insistence throughout this handbook on the necessity for exact adherence to the order of meetings and the general procedure as laid down. Number 4, the Presidium to be a model of steadiness. The Legion requires that the voice and action of its meetings shall be an example even to the most zealous member, and its multifold life enables it to play this part. The individual legionary may be prevented by illness, holidays, or other unavoidable circumstances from performance of the duties of membership, but the presidium being composed of many, who will not all be so hindered at the same time, will thus be able to rise above the limitations of the individual. The weekly meeting should not be omitted for any cause, short of actual inability to hold it. Should the customary day of meeting be definitely obstructed, the meeting should be transferred to another day. The fact that a great number of its members will be absent constitutes no reason for not holding the meeting. It is better to hold a meeting of a few members than to drop it altogether. It is true that little business will be transacted at such a meeting, but at least the Presidium will have acquitted itself of its most important duty, and the business of its future meetings will gain immeasurably from the enhanced respect which its members will instinctively have for something which goes on almost in spite of those who compose it, which stands steady in the midst of their weaknesses, mistakes, and miscellaneous engagements, thus reflecting in some faint fashion the chief characteristic of the church itself. Number 5, heat and light. The room should be well lighted and of comfortable temperature. Defects in this direction will convert to a penance the meetings that should be a pleasure, and will prejudice fatally the prospects of the presidium. Number 6, seating accommodation. Chairs, or at least benches, should be provided for seating purposes. If the members are scattered around on school desks or on other improvised seating accommodation, an air of disorder will be created, in which the Legion spirit, which is a spirit of order, will not thrive. Number 7. Presidia must meet at suitable times. The fact that most persons are at work during the day dictates that meetings be ordinarily held in the evening or on Sunday. But there are many who work during the evening and at night, and these must be provided for by having meetings at hours which suit them. Likewise, shift workers, that is, those whose working hours change periodically, must be catered for. Two presidia with widely different meeting times should cooperate to receive them. Those legionaries would alternate between the presidia according to their free time. To ensure the continuity of attendance and work, the presidia would need to keep in close touch with each other. Number 8, duration of meeting. The meeting shall not last longer than 1.5 hours from the appointed time for opening. If, in spite of efficient handling of the meeting, it is found that the business is frequently cut short or unduly rushed by the automatic closure, it should be taken as a sign that the presidium has too much to do, and the subdivision of the presidium should be considered. Number 9, inadequate length of meetings. There is no minimum duration prescribed, but if meetings habitually last less than about 1 hour, of which the prayers, spiritual reading, minutes, and allocutio occupy 1/2 hour, it looks as if there is inadequacy in some direction. Whether it lies in the number of members, or in the quantity of the work, or in the quality of the reports, it should be rectified. In industrial circles, it would be deemed a grave fault of system to neglect to work machinery to full capacity if there is a market for the output. Similarly, the Legion system should be worked to the utmost. No one can suggest that there is not a need for the highest possible spiritual output. Number 10. Late arrival or early departure. Legionaries arriving late for the opening prayers shall kneel down and recite privately the prayers on the tessera which precede the rosary and the invocations which follow it. But the loss of the presidium rosary cannot be repaired. Similarly, members obliged to leave before the conclusion of the meeting should first ask the permission of the president and then kneel and recite the prayer, "We fly to your patronage," and the invocations which follow. In no circumstances can the persistent late coming or early departure of a member be permitted. It is true that the work may be done and reported upon, but indifference to the missing of the opening or concluding prayers may well be believed to denote a cast of mind alien to, or even hostile to, the real spirit of the Legion, which is a spirit of prayer. Harm, not good, would be the fruit of such a membership. Number 11. Good ardor, the root of discipline. Upon A, the setting of the meeting faithfully according to rule, B, the orderly succession of duty to duty, C, the punctual taking of business as prescribed, D, the pervading note of Mary as the mainspring of that order, does the Legion rely for the development in its members of the spirit of discipline without which the meeting is as a clear head on a paralyzed body, powerless either to restrain its members or to drive them on or to form them in any way. Without discipline, the members will be at the mercy of the natural human tendency to work alone, or with as little control as possible, at the work dictated by the whim of the moment, and in the matter one pleases, and out of which no good will come. On the other hand, in a voluntarily assumed discipline devoted to religious ends, lies one of the most potent forces in the world. That discipline will prove irresistible if it operates unwaveringly, yet at the same time without admixture of grimness and in hearty responsiveness to ecclesiastical authority. In its characteristic spirit of discipline, the Legion possesses a treasure, which it is also able to bestow outside itself. It is a priceless gift, for the world alternates profitlessly between the opposite poles of tyranny and license. A lack of interior discipline may be cloaked by the operation of a strong external discipline, the product of tradition or a force. Where individuals or communities are dependent on that external discipline alone, they will collapse if it be withdrawn, as in moments of crisis. Though the inner discipline is infinitely more important than any system of external discipline, it is not to be supposed that the latter is unimportant. Actually, each requires the other. When the two combine in proper proportion, with the sweet motive of religion intertwined, we hold that triple cord which, the scripture pronounces, is not quickly broken. Sirach, chapter 4, verse 12. Number 12. Punctuality, paramount. Without punctuality, the Lord's command, set your house in order, Isaiah chapter 38, verse 1, cannot be fulfilled. A system that is training its members to disorder is warping them in a radical way. In addition, it is forfeiting that respect which is the basis of all right education and discipline. Surely that neglect of something vital, which could be so easily supplied, is as insane a proceeding as a proverbial spoiling of the ship for the halfpenny worth of tar. Sometimes a watch is placed carefully on the table but exercises no influence whatever on the course of the meeting. In other cases, it does play a part in regard to the beginning, middle, and end of the meeting, but none in regard to the regulation of the reports and other business. Whereas the principle of punctuality and order must apply to everything from beginning to end. If the officers are at fault in the above directions, the members should protest. Otherwise, they are aiding and abetting. Number 13. Manner of saying the prayers. Some impetuous souls find it hard to hold back even in the matter of praying, and this wrong sort of leadership can draw an entire presidium onto a way of saying the prayers which verges on the disrespectful. In fact, if there is one fault which is more or less general, it is that the prayers are recited too fast, seeming to denote a disregard of that injunction which bids legionaries to pray as if Our Lady herself, instead of her statue, were visibly present among them. Number 14, prayers to be one with the meeting. From time to time, it has been suggested that the rosary might be recited before the Blessed Sacrament, the members then proceeding to their meeting room. This proposal is not allowable on the general principle that the unity of the meeting is essential to the whole Legion system. With the meeting one, all the business takes a distinctively prayerful character, producing eminent fruits of heroism and effort, which it would lose were the bulk of the prayers to be said elsewhere. Such a change would alter the whole character of the meeting, and hence of the Legion itself, which is built upon the meeting. In fact, the resulting organization, however great its merits, would not be the Legion of Mary at all. Having said this, presumably it is unnecessary to state that the actual omission of the rosary or any other part of the prayers is, no matter what the circumstances may be, still less admissible. What the breathing is to the human body, the rosary is to the Legion meetings. Number 15, church devotions and meetings. For the foregoing reason, a presidium which has said the Legion prayers at some church or other function prior to its meeting is bound to repeat the full prayers at a presidium meeting. Number 16, special prayers at meeting. It is frequently asked if it is permissible to offer the prayers of the meeting for special intentions. As many applications for such prayers are made, it becomes necessary to define the position. A. If it is a question of offering the ordinary Legion prayers of the meeting for a special intention, the ruling is that those prayers should be offered for the intentions of Our Blessed Lady, the Queen of the Legion, and not for any other intention. B. If it is a question of supplementing the Legion prayers by some other prayers for special intentions, the ruling is that the existing prayers are already long enough and should not ordinarily be added to. It is recognized, however, that from time to time, items of exceptional legionary concern may call for special prayer, and in that case, some short prayer may be added to the ordinary prayers of the meeting. It is emphasized that such additions must be of rare occurrence. C. It would, of course, be allowable to recommend special intentions to the members for inclusion in their private devotions. Number 17. Does the report offend against humility? Members have been known to justify a valueless report by saying that they felt it to be contrary to humility to parade the good which they were doing. But there is such a thing as a pride which imitates humility, and the poets have termed it the devil's favorite sin. Those members, therefore, should beware lest in that thought of theirs may lie the subtle workings not of humility but of pride itself, and not a little of a desire to exempt their actions from minute control by the presidium. For surely, true humility would not urge them to set a false headline, which, if imitated by the other members, would ruin the presidium. No, to a certainty, Christian simplicity would impel members to avoid singularity, to submit themselves sweetly to the rules and observances of their organization, and to play fully their individual, but nonetheless essential parts in the building up of the meeting, of which each report forms, as has been said, a brick. Number 18, harmony, the expression of unity. Harmony, being the outward manifestation of the spirit of love in the meeting, must reign supreme, and efficiency, in the Legion sense of the word, never excludes the idea of harmony. Good accomplished at the expense of harmony is a doubtful gain. While those failings which are in their essence opposed to it must be shunned in the Legion like a veritable plague. This refers to things like self-assertiveness, fault-finding, ill-temper, cynicism, and airs of superiority at whose entry to the meeting harmony forthwith departs. Number 19, work of each one, a concern of all. The meeting begins with prayer, in which all realize that they have participated equally. This feeling of equal participation by all should characterize each item of the subsequent business of the meeting. Hence, conversation or laughter between individual members must find no place there. Members should be taught that each case is a concern, not merely for the one or two members who may be engaged upon it, but for all present, in such a degree that each one pays a spiritual visit to every person or place recounted as having been the subject of the work. Without this realization, members will follow with a mere attention the reports and consideration of the work of others, whereas every moment must be full, not merely with the attention which one gives to an interesting account of work done, but with a sense of intimate contact of personal concern. Number 20, confidentiality of paramount importance. The standing instruction read to the members month after month should bring home to them the all-important place of confidentiality in the Legion's scheme of things. Lack of courage in a soldier is accounted shameful, but treachery is infinitely worse. It is treachery to the Legion to repeat outside matters of a confidential nature learned or discussed at the Presidium meeting. At the same time, there must be reason in all things. Sometimes overzealous people may urge that in the interest of charity, legionaries should withhold from the Presidium all names and reports which involve neglect of religion. In this apparently plausible suggestion, there is an error and a threat to the Legion's life, as the Presidium could not function satisfactorily under such conditions. A. The adoption of this course would be contrary to the general practice of societies, all of which are accustomed to discuss their cases. B. The logical conclusion of the proposal would be that the co-visitors should maintain confidentiality even between each other. C. The unit of action in knowledge and charity is neither the individual member nor the pair of co-visitors. The Presidium is that unit, and the detail of all ordinary cases is due to that unit. If the reports are withheld, the unit becomes ineffective. Under the plea of charity, the real interests of charity are prejudiced. D. There is no analogy with the case of the priest, whose sacred functions put him on a different plane to the legionary. The latter learns in visitation little more than any other respected person would, and what is often common property in the adjoining homes or district. E. To remove from members the obligation to furnish adequate reports is also to remove that sense of minute control which means so much in the Legion system. No effective advice or guidance or criticism can be given so that the essential idea of the Presidium is frustrated. The education and safeguarding of the members, which are based on the reports, are rendered impossible. Unless the members' weekly reports are adequately detailed to enable the minute control already referred to, indiscretions will almost certainly occur, with perhaps detriment to the Legion. F. Strangest of all, the bond of confidentiality itself becomes loosened. For the guarantee of legionary confidentiality, so wonderfully honored at present, is the Presidium grip upon the member. If this grip is weakened, the bond of confidentiality weakens with it. In a word, the Presidium is not only the unit of charity and confidentiality, but is also their mainstay. The reports to the meeting are to be regarded as being in the same category as a family's discussion of its secrets and should allow for the same freedom of expression unless and until it is demonstrated that leakage is taking place. And even then, the remedy is not to limit reporting, but to expel the traitor. It is recognized, of course, that an occasional extreme case may be encountered in which the circumstances will suggest an absolute privacy. Recourse should at once be had to the spiritual director, or, if he be unavailable, to some other competent advisor who will decide the point. Number 21, freedom of speech. Is it in order to voice one's disagreement with the methods of the meeting? The atmosphere of the presidium should not be regimental, but rather family in its character. Therefore, fair comment should be welcomed from the members. But obviously, such comment must never be challenging in its tone or wanting in respect to the officers. Number 22. The meeting, the mainstay of membership. It is the human tendency to be impatient for visible results and then to grow dissatisfied with whatever is obtained. Again, visible results are an uncertain test of successful work. One member secures them at a touch, while the heroic perseverance of another remains barren. A sense of wasted effort is followed by abandonment of the work, so that the work which is valued purely from the aspect of results is a quicksand which will not support for long the ordinary membership. Such a support is essential. Legionaries will find it in the wealth of prayer, the ritual, the distinctive atmosphere, the reports of duty done, the blessed comradeship, the magnetism of discipline, the lively interest, and the very orderliness which each week go to make up their presidium meeting. No thought there of waste of effort to unloosen membership, but everything to bind it fast. As meeting succeeds meeting in regular succession, there comes the sense of smoothly running machinery, surely attaining the end for which it was contrived, and giving that fixed assurance of successful working upon which a persevering membership depends. Let the legionaries cast their thoughts a little further and see in this mechanism Mary's engine of war for the extension of her son's dominion. They are its parts. Its working depends upon the manner in which they lend themselves to it. Their faithful membership means its perfect working, which Mary utilizes to achieve the results which she desires. These will be perfect results for, quote, "It is Mary alone who knows perfectly where lies the greatest glory of the Most High," unquote, St. Louis Marie de Montfort. Number 23, the presidium is a presence of Mary. The advices of this section have in view the more perfect consolidation of the individuals into a body for comprehensive use in the official pastoral apostolate of the Church. The relation between that communal apostolate and the individual apostolate might be likened to the relation between the liturgy and private prayer. That apostolate is united to and sustained by the mothering of Mary, quote, "who gave to the world the life that renews all things, and who was enriched by God with gifts appropriate to such a role," unquote, Lumen Gentium, number 56. She continues to fulfill that role through the ministry of those willing to help her. A presidium places at her disposal a group of loving souls eager to help her in that office. It is certain that she will accept that aid. Therefore, a presidium may be imagined as a sort of local presence of Mary through which she will display her unique gifts and reproduce her motherhood. So it can be expected that a presidium, which is true to its ideals, will bestow around itself life and renewal and healing and solutions. Places with problems should apply this spiritual principle. And the following is taken from Sirach chapter 6, verses 25 to 30. Quote, "Bend your shoulders and carry her, and do not fret under her bonds. Come to her with all your soul, and keep her ways with all your might. Search out and seek, and she will become known to you. And when you get hold of her, do not let her go. For at last you will find the rest she gives, and she will be changed into joy for you. Then her fetters will become for you a strong defense, and her collar a glorious robe. Her yoke is a golden ornament, and her bond a purple cord. Unquote. Chapter 20, The Legion System Invariable. Number 1. Members are not at liberty to vary rules and practices as they choose. The system described is the Legion system. Each variation, however slight, makes others inevitable, till presently a body is in existence which indeed bears the name, but possesses little else of the Legion, and which the Legion would not hesitate to disown, even though work in itself valuable were being done. Number 2. Experience has shown that the name of an organization has little definite meaning for some persons, for they regard it as a virtual tyranny if they are not permitted to cover with the name of a standard organization some composition of their own minds. Sometimes, quote, modernizers, unquote, proceed to alter almost everything in the Legion while retaining its name. Can they not see that such an illegal transferring to their own possession of the established position and membership of the Legion would be the worst sort of depredation because it is in the spiritual order? Number 3. And places, like persons, are apt to conceive that they are out of the common, and that their case has to be especially legislated for. Hence the proposals which are from time to time made that the Legion system should be flexed to meet alleged special circumstances. Such modifications, if made, will have an unhappy sequel, for almost invariably they spring not from necessity, for the Legion has already demonstrated its universal adaptability, but from the operation of a false spirit of independence. Such will never attract the special blessings of heaven, and the fruit of that independence will always be a falling away. However, as it will not always be possible to convince people of this, it is at least pointed out to those who are set upon exercising a right of private judgment in relation to the rules of the Legion that their only course in honor is to refrain from covering their transactions with the name of the Legion. Number 4. Moreover, this ingenious picking of parts, which two clever men often indulge in, never succeeds in capturing a quality of sweetness and inspiration which was the real power of the original, so that the usual result of this species of surgery is a corpse. But at the very best, what is created is a beautiful machine and nothing more. When poor results or failure follow, there is a heavy responsibility to be faced. Number 5. The various councils of the Legion exist chiefly for the purpose of preserving intact the Legion system. At all costs, they must be true to the trusteeship committed to them. And the following is a quote from Pope John 23rd. Quote, "The system of the Legion of Mary is a most excellent one," unquote. And the following is a quote from Cardinal Newman, Essay on Development. Quote, "You must accept the whole or reject the whole. Reduction does but enfeeble, and amputation mutilate. It is trifling to receive all but something which is as integral as any other portion," end of quote.